This Slate spoiler special is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SPOILERS. The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hi, and welcome to a Slate spoiler special about season 2 of Netflix's Orange is the New Black. Orange appeared in its entirety on Netflix on Friday, and we here have devoured all of it to discuss it in great detail with you. I'm Willa Paskin. I'm Slate's TV critic, and I'm joined today by Slate's culture critic, June Thomas.
Hello, Willa Paskin.
Slate senior editor, David Haglund.
Hi, Willa.
And Slate assistant editor, Laura Anderson.
Hi, Willa.
Hi, guys. I'm really excited to talk about this show. I've been saving it up, every single one of my thoughts. So I thought we would just start by maybe going around and talking about if we liked it or not compared to maybe last season. June.
OMG, O-I-N-T-B. I really loved it, but if I'm forced to compare it with last season, I guess I didn't like it quite as much, but I was very impressed with the way that they had kind of held back some people. So there were still a few backstories, which is something that I really enjoy seeing. And it still managed to surprise me, which was the really huge thing about the first season, was that there were some surprises that were so unusual on television. And they still managed to pull that trick in season 2. So that was good. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I think the element of surprise is important because for me, I also liked it a little bit less. And I wonder to what extent that's because the show was not quite as good as it was in the first season, or whether it was just that it was no longer so surprising. The first season was such a breath of fresh air. It was like, this is like nothing else on television. And, you know, the second season was a lot like the first season, which we've now seen. So I do think it felt very uneven to me. I think more uneven than the first season. And there are a couple of decisions that they made that we can get into in terms of where to take the show that I think didn't quite pay off as much as they should have. I still enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. I do think it was maybe a mild letdown.
I think I tend to agree with David more than June. I thought that it was just a lot less fresh in the first season. There were a lot of storylines and moments and decisions that just felt really familiar to me as Hollywood tropes and sitcom tropes. At the same time, though, I was really totally satisfied by it. I may be like a little too satisfied by it because the end just like neatly tied up absolutely everything, and we can get into that too. Yeah.
I think one of the things that's remarkable about the show to me is both how much I love it and how happy I am to be watching it. And then there is a part of my brain that is like, some of this is stupid or like not as good as it could be. And those things almost are totally separate. Like I would sit and watch 100 more episodes right now. I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't shower. I would be so excited about it. And then I would also be like, but really, like, I think a lot of this was really neat and cheery. So to me, this season was, I think it actually started incredibly strong. I know that some people have issues with Piper. I think that Taylor Schilling's actually a really good actress. She's doing a really hard thing, which is anchoring the show. I think the fact that her and Alex, you know, weren't the centerpiece of the show, and she still really was the anchor of this season, is sort of a credit to her. But I thought that first episode was really great because it showed how messed up prison is in this way that I thought the rest of the season didn't quite, where it's like she gets on this airplane, she has no idea what's happening, she's completely powerless, and it's funny, and it's weird, and there's all these characters that are maybe a little too charactery for prison, but you also are like, you realize how horrible it is. And that over the next 12 episodes, it did get a little like hammy, a little like, you know, So-So calls it summer camp at some point, and you're like, kind of seems like summer camp sometimes. And that a lot of the darkness that sort of last season especially led up to, it wasn't in this season, even though they introduced this sort of major villain. I thought it was basically, as you said, it tied up everything. A ton of horrible things seemed like they were about to happen, and then they didn't happen.
They weren't quite as horrible as they first seemed. One of the things that really struck me this season was somewhat on that line of thinking, the way that it seemed like the prisoners had such a better deal than the correction officers. I mean, at one point we hear that they earn $18 an hour, and some of them are lazy, some of them are really corrupt, but it's kind of understandable when they're working while the prisoners appear to be sitting around. Now, if we know anything about the prison industrial complex, we know that that's, you know, a very wrong way of thinking. But when you're watching the show, that's kind of how it seems. Like, they have a little bit of work, but they sure seem to spend a lot of time just hanging out and kind of having fun together.
Well, I like that this season. So one of the two things I think the show seemed to make a goal in the second season is that they were going to further complicate the prison employees. People like Caputo, Fig, Healy, even though, you know, that happened to some extent in the first season. And I liked that. And I also think, I mean, I used to work at a place called Penn, which has a prison writing program. And some of the people I worked with were really involved in that program and worked a lot with prisoners. And they made a point to also extend their services to the people who worked in prisons because it is often horrible. I mean, it is often a terrible job to have. And I like that they became even, you know, more part of the drama in the second season.
You know, the thing about the show is it has such a humanist impulse, right? It's sort of almost reason to be is to be like, these people in prison are people and we want you to see them as people. And last season, I think it didn't have that agenda with the guards as much. So it was willing to make them more caricaturish. But I think one of the things that happened this season that is to me was lacking is in this sort of really generous, human, sympathetic mode, it kind of makes everyone a little bit the same, and it takes a lot of edges off, which is that this is a prison in which all of these women seemingly are very much in the category of wrong place at the wrong time, good person who did the wrong thing, got in over their head. You know, obviously people who do really violent crimes, maybe if you got to know them in all of their entirety, you would like something about them just because TV's makes you, you know, it makes you identify with the person whose story you're hearing so much. But there's none of that. I mean, there's very little people who are evil and bad. And that is also, I think, a part of human experience, just people who are, you know, would destroy your stuff because they could, because they're bored, who are petty, who are nasty, who only are nice to their friends. You know, there's that scene where we have the flashback to when Red is first in prison and V is takes over, you know, the black girl gang. And those black girls who walk in, you know, we don't know them. And they look really scary. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's nobody in Orange is the New Black right now who's scary at all. All those girls are like, they're basically, you know them and they're legible and they're nice. And I just think that there is a, I don't want it to be Oz, but there is like a missing piece there.
But see, I thought that the introduction of V was the introduction of a villain who was actually bad. My understanding of V is that she's a sociopath. Like, she didn't have any sort of extenuating backstory. She's just like a really mean, manipulative person who uses other people to meet her own ends. And I thought that, what's the name of the actress? Is it Lorraine Toussaint? I thought that her performance was amazing. I was totally enthralled by it. And I felt I really liked that departure from last season because I felt like the villains of last season, and to an extent also this season, like Fig and Cornstache, they always felt like they were kind of in a slightly different tonal plane from the rest of the show, just kind of cartoonishly awful. Mm-hmm. And I thought that V was a much more realistic.
But then what do you make of the fact that V basically completely gets hers? I mean, one of the things that's weird about this season is every single one of the prisoners' plans, I mean, these are powerless people. It worked. Like, Piper successfully gets, like, Alex back into prison. Like, the girl, you know, Poussey and Tasty's relationship, which I want to talk about more, which is, you know, so heartbreakingly starts to be torn apart. They end up being friends again. It's like V dies getting run over by a van that, like, Morello gave to someone to run away. It just, there was a neatness. Like, I think that that was, you know, that was, V is obviously, like, a darker streak. But then they kind of just, they did. I mean, I guess it's possible she's alive. We didn't see her body, you know, but they just kind of did it.
She looked pretty dead to me, but she could be alive.
I thought she seemed pretty dead to me as well. But
they did the thing where the camera comes in on her face and she looks pretty dead, but you know. I agree that I want to talk about Poussey and Tasty as well. I thought that, yes, the show seemed to sort of skim over the fact that their relationship had sort of fallen apart and then they just like came back together very quickly and easily. Also kind of skim over the fact that Tasty somehow like came to the realization that V is like a really bad person, but that didn't really land for me. Like, she supposedly figured out that somehow that V had, you know, basically, you know, undermined and effectively killed off her other protege earlier. I mean, that just wasn't really explained how Tasty came to this realization that V is really bad.
That was a dramatic failure because we saw what happened to RJ, but Tasty couldn't have known. And I guess we just see that Tasty sees the manipulation that V's doing and just realizes that, yes, she's a bad person.
Yeah, but if this is something that she has been experiencing since she was a child, I mean, that requires a lot of, I guess, like, psychological work in order to, like, get to a point where you realize that your maternal figure is evil. And, like, I just didn't really see that happening.
I mean, it seemed to me that this season, whereas season one had a lot of romance, in this season, the romance was about friendship. It wasn't about love, or it wasn't about sexual love. And I think that in that situation, we're supposed to believe that Poussé's friendship overwhelmed the sort of the duty, the sort of filial duty that Tasty felt to V. But yeah, that wasn't terribly convincing.
I do I do want to just talk about maybe some of the backstories, because I, you know, thinking about, again, the kind of women that are in this prison, I think there is, and I don't have statistics at hand, but I think there is a misrepresentation of middle class people who come from whole families who have sort of run into trouble, but are basically middle class. You know, we have Crazy Eyes, we have Poussé, we obviously have Piper, and that there we have So-So, we have a nun, and that the number of people, the number of women, I mean, even Cindy obviously has a mom who's engaged with her. The number of people that are like Tasty, that are come from foster homes, that come from broken families, that have had really serious drug problems, that have really serious drug problems in prison is not a lot.
Yeah, well, and I think, too, that, you know, one of the things that this show does is give us these dramatic and still, to me, kind of surprise. They're able to spin a surprise backstories. Because, in fact, most people in prison are there for small little drug offenses, and that's not terribly dramatic. It's just, you know.
I did think that Morello's storyline was the one to me that was like, oh, my God, she's really crazy. And it was in, you know, that was the first time and maybe the only time where our read of a character turns out it was wrong, and it was totally, it was totally different than her story. Like, it's not just that she commits credit card fraud. She put an improvised explosive device under a man's car who doesn't know her. I mean, that's really...
Well, that was maybe the best episode of the season, right? I mean, because not only was it a surprise at the end, it was a surprise that felt right, because she always seemed a little bit off. Okay. I mean, all of her going on last season about Christopher and and you know, their wedding, it always felt a little bit implausible. And so it was a surprise, but it was not a shock, and it didn't feel forced or contrived to have that twist. And it did kind of open up that character in a really satisfying way. And she's always been one of the most entertaining on the show. And then later on, when she has her moment with Natasha Lyonne's character,
Nikki,
you know, that felt, again, it was about friendship, like you were saying, June, and it was a very satisfying moment. I do think Nikki was not as present in this season as I would have liked her to be. Yeah. I mean, among the reasons why the show was slightly unsatisfying, I just think she's one of the best parts of it.
Well, just one last thing on Morello. It did feel like, again, one of the themes of the season was rehabilitation, that some of the characters did actually seem to have benefited from prison. Either, you know, Tucky having conversations with Healy and actually, you know, someone's talking to her, someone's listening to her. Not terribly credible, but... You know, that did seem to be something that they wanted us to think. And when Morello, you know, when they were doing the newsletter and Morello said, I'm going to step away from drama or from romance or whatever it was, you think, oh, you know, you've actually, you know, figured out what you need to do to change your life and to work out your life. And that's great. Again, not necessarily plausible in the dramatic context of the show, but, you know, at least sticking to the theme.
To totally change the subject a little bit, this should go back to V. I wondered if the whole thing was also like, a capitalism riff, right? Because it's like we have this V comes into a prison that is basically at stasis, like, right? Like Gloria's running the kitchen, but she clearly isn't on the make in the same way that Red ever was. There's calm. And then there's this person who comes in and sees opportunity and is gonna make money and totally screws everything up just because she wants to get ahead. And obviously, if it wasn't her, it would have been somebody else. But it's not really any of the girls that we know. And it's like this person, this like evil force who's like this capitalist basically totally just like upends the basically at that what seemed like a sort of placid, everyone kind of getting along Litchfield situation.
Yeah, and it was, you know, she chose an evil thing. Like, red also is somebody who brings in stuff from the outside.
Right, but it's eyeliner.
It's, yeah, eyeliner and harmless things. It's gummy bears or Jolly Ranchers.
Were those Biore strips that she, you know, like when he goes into the flower pot and she pulls out the things, and they sort of looked like seeds to me. And I was like, oh, are those, like, I don't know what those are.
Yeah, that I wasn't sure what those were either. Maybe they were Biore strips, to call back to season one.
Yeah, or something like that.
Whereas, like, V, tobacco, you know, something that we all just think, you know, it's worse than drugs. and so it was very, you know.
I will say that the last moment of Nikki having the heroin in the is, like, the only real lurking, horrible moment of the show. Because I think the thing is, you know, she gave the drugs in. Speaking of things that were happy, it's like her giving the drugs in earlier. It's another thing to Red. It's like another moment where you were so relieved. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it was plausible, but now she has this, like, whole stash, and that seemed one of the few things that wasn't tied up.
I felt like there were a few lurking horrible moments that were either, like, sort of quickly resolved or just kind of very briefly addressed, like the compassionate release episode. Mm-hmm. That's a really horrible thing that happened to this woman. There was more references to the shoe and how it's used completely arbitrarily and how horrible it is.
Or Fisher listening into the phone calls, which went nowhere.
Because they found out about Daya's pregnancy, right?
Yeah, although it didn't seem like, you know, it just felt like a very vague thing.
And then there was the transfer, the supposed transfer. And then I feel like, you know, the horrible thing there is that Ruiz was going to be transferred. She was going to be separated from her baby. And, like, how incredible, what a travesty that is, that this happens to people. And then that just suddenly, like, in the next episode, it's like, oh, never mind. That's not happening.
I kept expecting. See, what I thought was going to happen at the end was that Caputo was like, I'm going to be in charge. I canceled all your transfers. And then the last reversed was going to be, of course, Caputo doesn't end up being in charge. They appoint someone we don't know, and all their transfers happen, and everyone who thinks that they get to stay has to leave. And that would have been a horrible moment, and they didn't do it. And I actually, the character we're just talking about, what's her name?
Ruiz,
right. The moment for me, I think there's some moments that were just, like, clanked to me, really, like, clanked. They were not right. And I thought one of them was Ruiz and her husband, you know, or her baby daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's been mute and not speaking. He brings the baby every week. She talks to him. He says these one things. We see this one episode where she has read the New York Times or some in prison has been informed, you know, in some parenting class maybe, or on the what, like, has been informed from some other inmate about how you have to speak to your baby. It increases their vocabulary thousands of times. Fast forward to what it was like one of the very last scenes of the whole show. He's verbally, like, talking up a storm to his kid, like, secretly he's been such a mensch the whole time. I just thought that was so cheesy. I mean, it was very sweet.
I
it was
like
very
that.
Sweet, but it's like, this is the thing. It's like everybody within them is like such a good guy. Like, right. He's been sitting there stoically with his, like, tear tattoo. And no, but he loves, and I mean, he does love his baby, but it doesn't mean that he has to do it in this ridiculously, like, sort of bougie way, which is like, right. I also will take parenting class and talk a ton. I want to get a little into the structure and the stakes of the show, but first let's hear a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter offer code SPOILERS at checkout. Squarespace is simple and easy to use. It has a beautiful design and makes it really easy to drag and drop your own content. They have 24/7 support through live chat and email. You can start your trial with no credit card today and start building your website today. If you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code SPOILERS to get 10% off of your first purchase. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Spoiler Special. And now back to Orange is the New Black.
So, you know, Willa, I think you're right that the show too often this season wrapped things up neatly or lowered the stakes just when it seemed poised to raise them. But I think that it has a real challenge in doing anything else. And for me, that was made evident by the first episode, which you guys all seem to like. I would have hated if the whole season had been like that. I didn't enjoy that episode at all. Yeah. And I respect that it was probably more true to some of the experience of being a prisoner and not knowing what's going on. It was kind of unrelentingly awful. But I don't know that I could have watched 13 episodes of that. You know, they have presented themselves with this incredible challenge of making this kind of quirky, funny, enjoyable show that is, yeah, that is set in prison.
But they did manage it better last season. I mean, I just really, again, like, I just go back to the sing-along where So-So's like, it's like summer camp. And then it actually is like summer camp and they're all singing Stay and the lights are out and they're snuggling. And it's like, that looks pretty fun. I mean, I said this to you guys before, but I would have bought that scene 100 times more if they weren't singing Stay. Like, if they were singing No Scrubs or Killing Me Softly or some song that it seems possible is meaningful to all the girls in prison and not just, like, the 30-year-old white ones. But I still think that's a weird beat in this show, which is, like, so much about the experience of prison. You know, they talk about it being horrible, but over and over you see it and you're like, this doesn't seem as horrible as you're saying that it is. And I thought last season some of the threats, like even just having these porn stash, who I didn't miss particularly, but just the threat of like this violence and this and having no control, I think that there's a way to play the no control up, which without making it miserable, you know.
I just want to point out that last year there actually was a sing-along because they had that talent show. I mean, I think we might be sort of remembering season one with a little, you know, pink glasses.
But at least if that season ended like that, there was a sing-along and then there was a brutal beatdown. You know, those things came together.
Well, and also the way that the show demonstrated the awfulness of prison last season was because they introduced this new person, Piper, mm-hmm. who was experiencing it all for the first time. And it felt like this season they tried to do that again in a certain way with this character, So-So, who basically served to highlight how much Piper had changed, because now So-So was the new person and she sounded like an idiot. She had no idea what was going on because we were, you know, as the audience and as, you know, our sort of proxies on the show, we had sort of wised up and we knew how rough it was. But that was very dramatically unsatisfying. It felt like her character didn't have enough to do and we didn't really know her well enough. And there are so many characters already.
And she was so annoying. I mean, the thing is, the show does, I think, feel, and this is what they did last season with Pensatake and the other math heads who got complicated this season a little bit. I think it feels really comfortable being really mean to middle class, you know, So-So's half Asian, but like white girl problems. That they're very comfortable with making those people awful. And they're very comfortable with a whole range of issues. You know, I think some of the speeches that were given about white privilege by Crazy Eyes' mom, about Piper when she has on leave, demonstrate at once, like, how ridiculous these people are, how much they're trying. It seems like they understand the lay of the land there. And they're not always as unerring in other situations, or they're more they're less comfortable just making them assholes, you know?
Oh, I don't know. Okay, like Cindy, for instance, Cindy's backstory. She's totally an asshole in her backstory.
I actually love the Cindy backstory because that seemed like a real person to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like just, oh, she's like kind of a ham who kind of can't control herself and she means well, but she's so hard. You know, I thought that was a really good story. But I don't know if it's like, she's sort of fun. I think that there's this way, and it's TV. So obviously everyone needs mm-hmm. to be very engaging. Mm-hmm. But it's like, what a bunch of extroverts, you know? Like, what a prison of, like, people it's fun to chat with. Like, obviously there's exceptions. Like, there's Watson, who's very quiet. But, you know, they're also engaging and such good talkers. And Cindy is one of those people. And last season when we didn't know people better, there was more quiet. There was more, like, there was more depressives. You know, mm-hmm. there was a lot less depressed people.
Wasn't there also more racism in season one?
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely still the camps. And there was obviously the dynamic with V on one side and her crew of all black women and, you know, red. And they're
and still starting a wall with the Spanish.
Yeah. But somehow it didn't. And again, yeah. I don't know to what extent if it was just that it didn't feel as fresh this time. But somehow those barriers seem to be a little bit fuzzier in a way that is sort of easier to watch, doesn't feel as uncomfortable, but somehow in the end feels a little bit unsatisfying.
Well, another of the things that the fact that it is a TV show means that, for example, once you've done something, you can't just keep doing it. So in season one, we established that Daya's mom is the worst. She is horrible.
Right.
And yet in this season, she kind of seems better because they don't repeat her past sins. And now she's kind of trying to do better with her daughter. She's still competitive and she's still she's a total bitch. And she is like figuring out how Daya can, you know, sue people and get money. But we don't repeat her bad stuff. So she seems like a baseline, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, between 1 being evil and 10 being fantastic. She's maybe a 5, whereas we know she's really a 1.
Yeah, exactly. And Pensatake, who was horrible last season and unbearable, it's not that she's not still ridiculous and a weird character in a lot of ways, but was way less, you know, we feel for her so much more. She's so much less awful. I mean, this is the thing. I think that the show's goal is so generous and kind and good. It's like so good, really good in like a moralistic way that it's hard for me to be upset at it. But I do just think that it cheapens it a little bit, that there's nobody who's bad. Like if nobody can just be as bad as people are, it makes the good people, it just feels sort of too easy.
I don't know. Okay. So thinking about the bad people in the show, I guess I was just thinking about Caputo and Healy. And I felt like you were saying earlier, the show definitely tried to complicate them, make us, you know, humanize them a little bit. At the same time, though, I felt like they still remained really awful people.
I thought Caputo was not awful.
Yeah,
he was still awful.
He accepts that blowjob. Yeah. I mean, come on. And then at the end, Bennett tells him that Daya's baby is his, and he's just like, you know, shut up about it.
Again, a good thing.
Right, in the moment in the show, that plays kind of good. I thought the Figueroa complication was actually weirdly the most interesting because she was still so awful and they like you still feel like she's awful but you suddenly know more about her and I do think that there are precedents that they could like learn from, like The Wire, for example. What not to, you know, they should be like The Wire, but the thing is, The Wire did do this thing where it was like it showed you what institutional failure was like, right? Like the way that bureaucracy makes decent people horrible. So we had Healy talk about that he had been this idealistic guy, and then basically he realized he was totally powerless, and that's kind of, and that he doesn't get along with them anymore, and that's sort of what made him a jerk. But the show doesn't actually demonstrate it, so it's like Fig or Caputo. You know, the idea that you would put someone who was trying to do their best, which neither of them really seem like that, into a position of power and then watch it just not work at all. I think that there's room for Orange to do things like that in a more effective way. Like, I thought the stuff with the shots where he's like, you have to do more shots, was one of those examples where, like, they almost got it, right? Because you could imagine that's not only true because they're under orders to do that, but maybe, like, Big Boo shouldn't be able to kick a chair. She's in prison, you know?
Yeah.
And they didn't quite, like, then they had all the guards sort of turn against that idea as being, like, inhumane and bad instead of maybe them just being like, no, this is what we do and this is why this place is prison.
Yeah, I mean, it did back off that. It backed off the focus on Solitary. Also, weirdly, and I imagine this will come back in the next season, but the whole journalism subplot didn't really go anywhere. I mean, ultimately, there were things that were revealed. Piper got into the files.
Right.
But that character served a more minor purpose than I was expecting.
Yeah, that was totally magical. I mean, how exactly would Piper, you know, I mean,
again,
she bumps into
Caputo
and he says, let me see.
Right. And all of their schemes were successful. I mean, that's crazy. They are literally in prison and they are all, their scheming beats all the people outside of prison. I did want to talk about maybe, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but the Polly, Larry of it all. I will say I do want to say when my most screaming at the screen of the whole season was when Larry is like, would the moon do this, and kisses Polly, and I wanted to be like, that is exactly what the moon would do. The moon would totally kiss the sun's best friend. You're so crazy.
The moment that I wanted to scream at my computer the most was when Polly and Larry both together tell Pete that Polly is leaving Pete. I mean, sorry, that's just like more like, how do you break up with your husband with your lover with you? It's just like, I don't know. I hated that subplot. I thought it was ridiculous.
I felt like it was only okay in the sense that they were like, we want these people off the show, basically. And next season is about Alex and Piper, and we're done with this triangle.
Okay, sorry to change the subject. I'm just getting a little bit bored of Alex and Piper. I'm not sure if I'm the only one.
Whoa.
Okay, maybe I am the only one.
All right, well, did you guys have thoughts about Polly and Larry?
I actually didn't mind it. I mean, I thought that Larry, you know, he's always been the weak link on the show. He was in season one. And somehow this, you know, it gave him something to do. Like you said, it gets him sort of off the show probably. And I actually thought that, you know, him and Polly coming together, I thought that was all handled reasonably well.
That was one of the things that, you know, at the beginning I was saying that there were a lot of, like, Hollywood tropes that I felt that the show visited this season. That was one of them. It's like every single beat in the Larry-Polly relationship was just very predictable and, you know, it was a dynamic that we've seen a million times before.
Right,
that's
you're
why
helping me out. Oh, you're such a
nice
guy.
Exactly.
Yeah, no,
this woman has mistaken this guy for your baby daddy. So.
Yeah, it was also, I couldn't tell from the scene where they told Piper, like, if we were supposed to believe that they were actually super in love, or if they were like, this is us making this really wise, like, familial choice for each other, that we're both the stable people. I can rely on you. You can rely on me. And we have sex. You know, there was like, there was that moment where they said they were in love. But I just, I couldn't tell if I was supposed to 100% believe it because it felt a little.
No, I thought that it was sort of there was some convenience there. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they fell into each other for the obvious reasons, and that came through. Yeah. So it didn't. I completely see what you're saying, Laura. But it's still. I was glad that it just kind of steadily moved towards that resolution, and then it was done. And I was, you know, it made sense in terms of who those characters are to me.
We don't have to have still another not at all credible journalistic storyline with Larry ever again.
That's true. I did think that the poop on the doorstep store, I thought that was like funny and cute, and I actually also weirdly was moved, like. It was one of my, like, real moved moments of Piper eating a hamburger and drinking a 40 alone on, like, in Red Hook, basically, on the pier in Red Hook. And I was like, I don't know why this is working for me, but this is working for me. Like, she doesn't want the champagne and she doesn't want her bougie life and she's different. But wait, we do have to discuss Alex and Piper, who Laura just said are not doing it for her this season anymore.
So, okay, here's my defense, to the extent that I can have a defense for such an opinion. I think that the show has done a really good job of establishing that Alex is that person for Piper, mm-hmm. who just, like, drives her crazy. You know, she can't get her out of her head. She's just, like, that figure in her life. And, like, we all know that there are figures like that in our lives, and, like, the show does a really good job of like, portraying their relationship. But, like, all the flashbacks, which are incredible, which I find very repetitive, and just, like, the continue, I don't know, it's just, like, it's sort of getting kind of, like, soapy to me, like the ups and downs of their relationship. Yeah. It's just not that interesting to me anymore.
See, I think it is soapy and repetitive, but I don't mind it because I like it.
Yeah.
And so I can't defend it, except it's something of a relief to me. And I was glad that she wasn't all that present this time. And so it was a kind of a figure, and you could really be that person who's in the back of your head and you can't get rid of. I'm glad that she wasn't actually there, but, you know, I'm ready for it in season three.
I am interested. I think also, and I don't know what the contract negotiations were like, but obviously Laura Prepon didn't sign up for the season, was going to be in an episode. Then that news came out. Everyone was like, what? And she was like, oh, right, I'm on a hit show and everyone loves me. I totally want to be on this show. And a lot of the structure of this season felt to me like something had happened in the middle, which is they wrote her off in the first episode. Then they realized after this chat, like, oh, we can have you back for the back end. We don't have it made for you to do that. So we're going to do these flashbacks. We're going to have you drop in because we have you for all of season three. And I thought that there was some floppiness there because of that stuff. And basically, all the ups and downs, we are now set up for season three for them to be together. I mean, they don't have, like, for all the messed up stuff they've done to each other, they are totally in, like, they're in it. Like, okay. they're not going to come back and, like, be like, ah, I still hate you.
Oh, it's but, like, how many unforgivable things can you do to a person?
Totally.
So, like,
okay,
big ones.
Okay, another thing, this is slightly changing the topic, but another example of them dropping the stakes is at the very beginning, at the end of the first episode, we see that Piper has perjured herself. We think that that something terrible is going to happen to her. No. And then, like, a few episodes later, then they're still, like, back together. They still love each other. But I mean, they've both done such horrible things to each other, culminating again in Piper getting Alex back into prison, which, you know, I kind of doubt Alex will feel fully grateful about. I mean, it's, I don't know. It's just like.
But the thing is, I think that they had this conversation in the end of last season, too. It's like they're not going to work outside of prison because right. Alex doesn't have a job and doesn't want to have a real job and doesn't want to stay.
Can't get a job.
And doesn't want to stay in one place. So it is like they have this romance where it only works when they're incarcerated. It does work when they're incarcerated because they're both so desperate. But it's not like – it doesn't seem to me like the show has committed to them having a happy ending forever. Right. Do I want to see them make out in prison? Totally. I do. I'm psyched to them to be cuddly and sweet. Like, I think that that is I'm happy that that's going to be a part of season three.
Well, and this show is going to have its challenges for sure going forward because, you know, Piper's crime was supposedly not that serious. You know,
well,
she
I guess
was,
I mean that's what I think that whole complication achieved is
that's
establishing.
How it appeared,
right?
But then he gets off, And so it's not clear that she could be charged with perjury now. It wasn't clear to
but
me.
But, yeah. I mean, she got
and
in.
Certainly
in,
never came
she
back.
She got in like, September, right? And we saw Valentine's Day. So it's really only been, like, 6 months. I think she was in for 14 months. It's like, this is TV math. They can. Yes. I think they very easily can make it four seasons. If they can make it more than four seasons with Piper, I'm sure they can come up with something crazy or do something else. Or, you know, if they're wise, they will end it because most TV shows should not be longer than four seasons.
Or move on with her not in it anymore.
But, I mean, right. Totally. And I. That's true. Although I did think, I said this at the very beginning, I think that Piper sort of proved her worth as like a point of view character this season, almost because she had so much less going on and she still felt, to me, really essential to the story.
And let's talk about bodies. I mean, the thing that just blows my mind in the show is how, okay, there are some people who are not big stars actors, they're not standard actors, I don't know quite how to put it, but the way that, you know, that they find a way to show people, you know, without makeup, without just standard body. That's why So-So seemed so wrong, because she had the standard actress body. And, you know, it's just, and so the fact that Piper has it, and yet she is different, and she does have a kind of charisma or a good looks or something that in life outside as well as life behind bars, she is special and she does get special attention and treatment. And that's so real. And I love that, because the others wouldn't get it. And you know,
I think we have to wrap up. We didn't talk about Rosa and we didn't talk about Crazy Eyes, so we can all think about that quietly to ourselves.
We can talk about at least one of those things next time.
We also didn't talk about Poussey speaking German, which was one of my
favorite. Or Poussey's girlfriend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or if we're talking about bodies, that was my favorite. Like, I much prefer the flashbacks of Poussey having sex with her girlfriend to the flashbacks of Alex and Piper having sex.
And we'll leave you on that note. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back for season 3.